This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. Welcome to The Essentials. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and this is The Reset. We are back, and we are here for a difference. The Essentials will be heard this time every Thursday at 6:30 p.m., and we are seeking to do some things different this time around. We want to be brighter. We want to be bolder. We want to be deeper. We want to be more fundamental in every single thing that we do. And we believe that in our previous iteration, we did that. But the whole idea is we're going to do that even more so. So what have we been doing in the past? What have we been doing while we were away? Well, guess what? Between the last time you heard The Essentials and now, we certainly would have done some writing, we have done some reading, we've done some studying, and you know, it's very, very delightful. It's very, very good to know that, you know, we have a couple of books. We have a couple of books that we are working on. And I want to start as we set the tone for what we are seeking to achieve here. I want to start with a poem, one of the poems from my book, Whispers of a Country Boy from Benin to the World, and it reads, fearlessly or fearfully fearless. I am fearless, I am bold, I'm courageous. However, I am with fear. How can I be fearless yet afraid? How can I be bold when I tremble in the moment? My heart races, it skips many beats. My fingers tingle, temperature rises. The sweat trickles the track of my spine. I am afraid, but I'm fearless. While I tremble, I decide to be bold. I will my being to be firm, to stand tall, courageously refusing to cower, wet from the sweat of my crown, but still standing bold. The rational me screams, run. The fearless me chooses to stay. Stand in place. Face the music of the moment, take on the challenges. I am fearless, but not without fear. I am bold, but I'm tempted to cower. I'm courageous, I'm standing tall. I'm choosing to be the greatest me. I am bold, I am courageous, I'm fearfully fearless. I'm choosing to be me, shining in all my magnificence, digging deep so I can stand on high, tempted to run but remaining rooted. I know that is the only way that I can truly fly. I am courageous, I am bold, I'm fearfully fearless. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to hear from you. We want to hear from you as we step out in this stance of being fearfully fearless. You see, in life, it is not that you are not afraid. It is not that you are always brave and courageous. But it's the fact that you find yourself in a position where you must do so. You must stand tall. You must get to the place where you understand that if you give in to the urges of the moment, if you give in to the pressures and the tensions of the present time, you would have killed your chance for a better future. You would have killed our chance for a better future. So here we are, and we want to make a difference. We want to build a community around the essentials. A community which is interested, a community which cares for, and a community which consistently thinks about the well-being of us, of me, of you, of others. That's where we want to be. We want to, in this 90 minutes that we have here, to create a platform on which you can express yourself about how we can become better as a people, how we can become better as individuals, how we can become better as a country. And we want to do it in such a way that our influence spills over into the region, to touch Jamaica, to touch Barbados, to touch Trinidad, to touch the world. Because I believe that within the confines of the Bahamas, we have great people who have the ability to step beyond the normal, to step beyond the usual, and become their greatest self. I honestly, truly believe that. So how are we going to do that? We're going to focus on creating a better us. We're going to focus on having the conversations which are open, which are honest, which are true. And we're going to disagree. And the moment when we will disagree fervently, we will disagree with passion, we will disagree, we will agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, we should always be guided by the fact that we're doing this for the purpose of a better us. Not just for a better me or a better you. Because both of those positions, while they're good, they're totally suboptimal until we get to the place where it becomes a better us. We. When we eschew ourselves of the I-ism and the me-ism, we get to that place where we can start seriously thinking about our contribution towards building a better country, a better nation, a better people. And you may say, well, you know, yeah. But we are just one person, you are insignificant. No. Every single one of us are here, is in this world, in this country, on this planet, in this universe, for a purpose. And I'm led to believe that that purpose is towards the greater good of humanity, however you look at it, and whatsoever the subject. Whether we are talking about economics or healthcare, or we are talking about poverty, or we are talking about education, whatsoever it is that we are doing, we must be guided by focusing on the essentials which makes us us. The things which, at the end of the day, when we distill our humanity down to its very, 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 very essence, the thing in it which cries out for the best of us, which looks for the goodness in all of us, which dictates that we behave such that we benefit every one of us, that thing there, the essence of us, the urge, that initial urge that you feel every single time you see a situation, but then you reject it. We want to get to the place where we are responding to that first initial instinct to be our best self. Every single one of us have it. Every single one of us experience that. You see someone on the street, they fall. Your first instinct is to help. Then you don't, and you rationalize why helping is not a good thing. What we are trying to do here, the community that we are trying to create here, is a community which more often than not responds to that first instinct of being our absolute best self. So in order to achieve that, we have to hear from you. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts. We want to hear your opinions. We want to see what you're thinking. And so we will engage. We will open the lines. We will talk to each other. It's a evening time, and I know, you know, you may at this point in time be totally in your routine, but guess what? The Essentials is going to disrupt that. And we want to disrupt that and make you a part of this. Because we are not here for fame. We are not here for fortune. Certainly wouldn't happen in these circumstances. We are here as a means and a process and a medium and a platform and a leverage to which I too can find means of experiencing the better side of me. And to find a way of engaging and connecting with the best side of you. And so at the end of the day, we become better. Because there's a lot of good things out there and a lot of bad things out there too. We can decide which one we want to talk about. Do we want to talk about the bad things and focus on that? Do we want to get to the place where we are disparaging individuals, where we're talking bad about them? Is that what we want to do, or we can make a choice to do the opposite, where we look for the positive and we uplift? Now, I'm not saying that we are going to be disingenuous. I'm not saying that we are going to sweep or brush things under the rug. Absolutely, the opposite is true. We need to be brutally honest. We need to be brutally open. And we need to be at a place where we can confidently speak to the things which are not right, which are not accurate, the things which we think can be changed. We want to share our ideas in that fashion. But we really, really have to get to that mindset where more often than not, we are willing ourselves to take the positive road. Why is that important? Why is that important? We recognize that there's a negative road, but we choose to do the positive thing because we believe that that is a road which takes us further. And if we're in this business, if we're truly in this business of growing ourselves and growing the country and becoming our better selves, then obviously there is no other way to do it. Or at least I am convinced that there's no other way of doing it. So we need your input. The numbers are, 323-623-2325-4316, 325-4259. I'm still rusty. The text line is 422-4796. We definitely, definitely want to hear from you. So together, we can make this a much better place. So some of the things that we plan to do with the show is to reach out to you as a young entrepreneur. We want to give you a voice. We want to give you a couple of minutes on the show, maybe in studio or calling in. We want to hear what you're doing. We want to hear about your successes. We want to hear about your triumph. We want to allow you to tell others through us how they can reach you. We also want to make some inroads into the business arena. So we want to talk to business people. We want to hear how they do it. We want to know how they have been successful in their businesses. And then we want to build bridges. We want to build some bridges throughout the region. We want to help you to make connection with Jamaica, with Barbados, with Trinidad. We are going to be out there reaching out for these people, and you will hear them. You will hear persons coming in from all over the world. And as a result, we are going to, or we are seeking to, make this a useful and productive 90 minutes, where when we walk away, we're able to look back and say, yeah, we created some value. We created value that everyone can use. So reach out for that. You will also get an appreciation that this is going to be the place where, as I'm putting it, passion meets profession. So I have a professional side and I have a passion side. I like to do radio. I like to write. I like to speak. That's me. I'm into communications. And many times we feel the tension of trying to, you know, separate our lives and put them into different pockets because we want there to be order. But the tension and the pressure of putting them neatly into pockets themselves create even greater disorder. So forget about that. Let's roll everything up together. Let's pull all of the bits and pieces of us, because, of course, we said we are in the process of making the best of us. So passion meets profession. So there are times when you're going to hear a little bit about risk management and compliance and some economics. You're going to hear a little bit about strategy and running companies, because that's where my profession is and I'm passionate about those things. But more importantly, you're going to hear everything that we do in such a way, presented in such a way, that you're able to learn. It's not going to be highfalutin. It's not going to be over the top or over your head. It's going to be done in such a way that everyone will be able to learn and grow from that. So again, the numbers, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and the text line is 422-4796. And there are no rules, really. There are really no rules in terms of calling in. But this time around, please do not call me. Do not call me and remind me that I'm from Jamaica. I know that. I know from whence I come. Do not call me and tell me to go back home, because this is my home. Do not call me and tell me that I have absolutely no capacity of loving the Bahamas, of wanting the best for the Bahamas, and the things that I'm saying, I should go back and tell them to Jamaicans, because that is not my intention. My intention is, for as long as I am here, to contribute as much as is possible to this country. So we want to get that out of the way very, 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 very clear. I think in the past, I have been, you know, accommodating, very calm about it. But there comes a point in time where I think enough is enough. There comes a point in time where we have to say to each other, how far must I run? How much must I pick up and carry? How much must I bend over backward to demonstrate to you? Not that I'm intending to do so intentionally, but for you to, I don't need you to believe me, but just take my word for it that whatsoever it is that I do and say, I do and say so with a pure heart and from a place of honest concern for that of which I speak. So I just said it. I remind you that I'm consistently bombarded by the fact that whenever I speak, I sound different. I can hear it too. I know I have a different accent. I am totally bombarded by the fact that, you know, I originally grew up in another place. There are many nights when I go to bed and I dream about that place. And I dream about the Bahamas, and I dream that I'm in the Bahamas, and I dream that I'm in Jamaica. I cannot forget those things. You don't need to remind me. What we want to do is to have a conversation, regardless of how you may see me, we want to have a conversation as two human beings or three human beings, as a group of human beings, really geared at creating value for us. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. Do I sound a little bit different? Maybe. Am I mad? Absolutely not. Am I concerned that sometime we spend too much time on the negative and the insignificant? Most definitely. Am I committed to, as the tagline says, advance the national conversation? Most definitely. And this is one way of doing so. We have to. We have to, as a people, recognize our differences, but also recognize that despite our differences, there's so much more, and in so many ways, that we are similar. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, I'm going to jump into the big topic of the day. It's the budget. It's budget season, and we definitely want to get some conversation in on that. Colin, I want to hear from you. Share your thoughts. It's election time. Election time is in the air. It's a budget. Budget is right, as just been read. Where are we now? Where are we going for the future? What about this whole issue of corporation tax? What about the debt? What is happening?
It's my come determination right to win. I survive the worst of times. I survive.
So how does COVID-19 contact tracing work? Public health officials first identify who has COVID-19. This person is considered a positive COVID-19 case and is asked about the individuals with whom they were in contact. These individuals are called contacts. It is important that persons who have tested positive for COVID-19 be honest with the healthcare providers so that they can effectively do their jobs. The health officials call the contacts and explain that they were exposed to COVID-19 through an infected person. The contact is informed of the necessary steps they need to take. These steps include self-quarantine for 14 days, do not allow visitors, answer the phone when health officials call to assess daily, and inform them of symptoms if they develop. At the end of the 14 days, no testing is needed unless symptoms are present. Let's do our part to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
This message has been brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Sign up for CostRight membership and join the Savings Club. As a member, you get access to exclusive discounts on your favorite grocery club packs, appliances, electronics, outdoor living, and so much more. Whether shopping for your home or business, you can enjoy low warehouse prices on quality name brand products. Your CostRight membership also allows you to save at other participating businesses, and Gold Card members can earn an annual 2% reward up to $500. Sign up for the CostRight membership card today and let the savings begin.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South, call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Well, the years have come and the years have gone. Still the Son of Man keeps a-trotting on.
Journey.
Journey
on. independence journey on.
Well, now I have loved and I have been loved. I have judged and I have been judged.
Journey on.
So whether calm or storm, there's a victory. 'Cause I'm in all and all is in me.
And welcome back to The Essentials. Like I said, if you want to participate, the numbers 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and the text line is 422-4796. We want to, you know, just jump into the budget a bit. And also to mention that we are streaming live on Facebook. I see Dina Cartwright is watching. Dina Cartwright is a good friend. I want to say welcome to the show, Dina, however you choose to consume it. But, you know, tell a friend, come join us. We want to ensure that this movement is fundamental and sound. The budget was read, or the budget communique was read, two weeks or so now. And as usual, the way these things go, once the communique is read, there are always persons who are, you know, commenting. There's commentary. And, you know, I'm one of those persons who have been given the opportunity and in many ways the privilege to comment on these things on various fora. So on radio or television, last night we had the Financial Voice, which I think was a very, very, robust and good discussion. But there's just never, ever enough time to kind of get into it and to get your views out. So I will use the space of this show to kind of say a little bit more. Let's begin with the overall position of the budget. I've labeled a number of budgets in the past. I've said, this budget, is a crossroad budget. It's not fully there or that sort of thing. And as I was writing about it, I have a series of articles which have been published in the newspaper. I thought about it and I really, really gave it some serious and honest thought. And I came to the conclusion that, it's a little bit too difficult at this point in time to label the budget itself. So what I did was I thought about the environment within which the budget is set at this point in time. And my conclusion is that we were at a tipping point at this point in time. And there's a couple of reasons why I settled on this whole idea of there being a tipping point. One of which is the strong influence of the definition by Gladwell, which says a tipping point involves critical mass, some things approaching boiling point, or some things approaching thresholds. And I think very much that where we are today, where we are with the economics of the country, really, really aligns with this idea of a tipping point. Critical mass. We have a significant level of debt, the highest level of debt. Obviously, every single year, the debt is at its highest level. But the difference is, this year compared maybe to some earlier years, is the quantum of debt to GDP. Depending on which calculation you choose, or at what point the measurement takes place, our debt to GDP could be as high as 100% or more. The official number right now, I think, is 83%, which is high. And why is that high? Why is that so important? And why is this a tipping point, if you will, or a critical mass? The debt situation is the one era, or one of the boldest era, which everyone has just jumped on and say, hey, you know, the budget didn't fix that. The budget didn't fix that. There wasn't any clear strategy. There wasn't any strategy. Some persons say there was no strategy, which is not true. There actually is a strategy outlined in the budget communique. Now, do you have to pay attention to the reading or pay attention to the listening in order to discover it and to understand what is there? Yes. But there is one. And it speaks to the idea of a reduction of, I think, about $775 million at some point in time. It speaks to the application or the use of institutional lending, and by institutional lending is, you know, going to the World Bank and going to the IDB, because effectively they provide you with loans which are cheaper than you can get on the open market. And then it speaks to the employment of the Fiscal Responsibility Act, which is coming into play on July 1. And I must confess, I haven't read all that it's in there. I have a general idea of what it is supposed to do. But it forces, or by law, it requires that the government outline a very clear strategy, and that is to be published. So in a way, the budget communication says, here is what we plan on doing, or at least here is a portion of what we plan on doing. And by the construct of the law, or by the force of the law, we will be forced to show you the rest of it. So there is a strategy. Now, one can argue as to whether or not that strategy is sufficient, or whether that strategy met with your expectations. But sometimes, this is where we get into conversations which are not always totally and 100% honest. Not because we necessarily set out to do so, but because we lead with our expectation. I expected this, so as long as I didn't see this, there is nothing there. The truth is, there is something. Is it sufficient? Would that satisfy you? Maybe not. But let's start at what is there, and let's give props for what may be there and the potential that it could have. But let's go back to the old idea of the budget itself and the debt. The debt to GDP up at 83% is significant. And it's significant for this particular reason. We always hear about debt to GDP. You do not want your debt to GDP beyond 60%. Rule of thumb, 60%. But why is this rule of thumb in play? What is the significance of this rule of thumb? Because oftentimes we hear about it, but nobody bothers to explain it to us or to drill down into what is the fundamental reason behind this. And this is important in order for us to understand sometimes the numbers in front of us, to understand the significance or the graveness of what we are faced with. Now, instinctively, some of this information can easily be gleaned from just looking at the numbers. But the fundamental understanding of what these percentage points to is important. So, per report, per experiments and pronouncement made by important organizations such as the IMF, World Bank, so on and so forth, when you borrow to fund your budget, borrowings from 1% up to 30% for every dollar you spend, it is likely to create an expansion in GDP. So incremental expansion. So you spend $1 million this year, which represent 5%, then you are having an expansion. And the more you spend up to 30%, the more growth you're likely to realize in the economy. Once you get to 30%, For every additional dollar you spend, there is a diminishing increase. What does that mean? For every $1, the impact on GDP is less than a dollar. So up to 30%, pretty much about even or more, yeah? After you cross that 30% threshold or so, it starts to diminish. And it diminishes until it gets to about 58% or somewhere around that 60% mark. And once it gets to that 60% mark, it changes to negative. So you now have an appreciation of why it is so important for us to really take a very, very close look at where our debt is. And this is why I said that we are at this tipping point, because we have right now a critical mass of debt. So we're now past 60%, and we are at 83%, or depending on the calculation, if we accept the IMF pronouncement that the economy is now at $9.5 billion, and we are projected to have $10.5 billion in debt, that is over 100% in another 12 months, yeah? So what the research says is that after 58 or 60%, for every dollar spent, it has a negative impact on the economy. So we are in that negative impact zone right now. And I think everyone understands that, why there need to be an urgency in fixing the debt. So from the budget perspective, the fact that there wasn't maybe a very clear or a clearer delineation of to exactly how that is going to happen would cause individuals to say, well, you know, there's nothing happening here. This isn't the budget that we expected. But is the budget totally, totally without value? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And there's some things which I see from my perspective, and I try to do this. I try not to mimic what anybody else say. I read the thing for myself. I listen to the presentation myself, and I try to do my own analysis. I listen to other individuals. Many times I hear things which better inform me or create a better understanding. And then I go back and I relook at what I have. And if I need to reshape that, then yes, I definitely do that. I'll always encourage persons. When I was here before, I encourage you, it's not a difficult document to read. At least the budget communicate. Take your time, read it. First year, it may be a little bit difficult, but after at least 2 years, you'll become very, very comfortable with it. So is the budget totally without value? I don't think that is the case. I believe that some of the focus on Invest Bahamas and revamping the investment authority is an absolutely great thing for the long-term future. And it represents in my mind, that represents in my mind, one of the areas or one of the things that I thought would have been kind of the central aspect of this particular budget. Recognizing that the economics, the money, the dollar aspect of it was always going to be difficult. I anticipated that it was going to be a little bit richer with policy positions which didn't immediately draw on a dollar resource. So policies set to create a foundation for the future. But like I said, Invest Bahamas is a big one, a very, very big one. Why is it a big one? Because right where the country is today, and I don't care who you're listening to, I don't care what you think about the budget, what you think about the persons who presented it, what you think about whosoever is discussing with you. The truth of the matter is that this economic circumstance that the Bahamas finds itself in is not solvable in 1 year. It's not solvable over 5 years. It is a long-term fix. However, long-term fix, like planting a tree, like planting anything which grows, requires planting. No. The sooner you plant it, the better it is for you. There's this big question which is always out there. When is the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When is the second best time? Right now. So, we have the opportunity to right now start to plant the strategies and the policies which are going to germinate fruit for the future. Why is this important? Because there is only one salvation, absolutely one salvation, that the Bahamas have, given the quantity of debt that we have right now, given the size of the economy, and given the cadence at which the economy has grown historically up to now. The only salvation we have in moving that forward is to change that cadence. What do I mean by that? We have to grow at a faster rate. We have to grow in a more significant way. That is the only way we're going to earn money to make a dent in this big debt burden that we have. But that is a little bit of an understatement, to be honest. And I said that deliberately because, you know, I want to catch your attention. The truth is that there are options. Like, for example, the government could raise taxes. The government could raise taxes or sell some assets and pay down the debt. We don't have a whole lot of assets which can be sold at this point in time. The good ones, certainly you don't want to sell them. The port, the airport, and so on and so forth. Don't want to touch any of those because they're doing well. Do you want to raise taxes? No, we do not want to raise taxes. And that is the big issue. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, you're welcome to The Essentials. You're on Guardian Radio. You're the first caller for The Essentials. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
You know, I always like to start off to say that what I need in a talk show host, right, is integrity. You see, this is what I need. What I'm looking for in a talk show host, right? Now you are talking about the debt, right? The mm-hmm. debt to GDP, right? We in the Bahamas, right?
Mm-hmm.
We fail to, the government has debt. Because its revenue is not sufficient to supply its responsibilities to meet the demands of its responsibility to its people.
That's correct.
Right. So we refuse to talk. It's not GDP is not competitive or it's not a good one. It's that our government does not effectively tax it. You see, and then that's because of our leaders, you know, our politicians, our media, you know, it's because of them and their capitalist ways. You see, what they like to call themselves is to economics, they like to call themselves conservative, right? And then when it comes to human rights, they want to become liberal. Mm-hmm. They want to say that they are liberal. You see, so our government, no matter how much we grow our economy, no matter how much we grow it, if our government don't tax it, it does not have any effect on our debt. Our debt will continue to grow.
Okay, caller, let's talk about this. You started out by saying integrity, so let's talk about this. If you have an economy of $100, right?
Right.
And you're taxing at 10%, let's use easy number, your total tax revenue is going to be $10 each year.
Correct. Right. Okay.
Right. If you grew that economy to 1,000, how much is your revenue now?
That revenue would be $100.
Exactly.
Right.
So the only point I'm making.
You're saying you growing that's 100%. That's 1,000. That's 1,000%.
No. I'm just throwing out numbers, and we could say we could say we grow it to 200. So we now have 20, right?
Okay.
The whole idea is that we are faced with a couple of options, right? We either increase our tax intake for the government, or we grow the economy in such a way that we don't need to increase the taxes. You and I know that changing the growth in the economy overnight is not an easy thing.
So, by you saying that, right? For us to grow the economy sufficient that our government is able to take care of its our social responsibilities, mm-hmm. we would have to grow our economy by 1,000%, because that's how much our government revenue shortfall is about, and that's like a utopia. It's not going to happen. You see, competitively, our debt to our GDP is super. It's leading in the region and in the world. So it ain't about the size of our economy. It's about our taxation. Okay, let's look at all the social programs that the U.S. government today is endeavor to bring forward.
Bear in mind, I'm not disagreeing with you. You know, I'm absolutely not disagreeing with you, because you have a while you may not be saying this, there is a discussion to be had that the GDP, as presented in the country, is a deceptive point of reference for the level of income that we should take in, because there are certain allowances which have been given to investors and big investors and so on, which pretty much have kind of sold out some of our tax for many, many years to come.
Right. So our taxation is the issue, right? But we have our leaders that they are so conservative that they lack integrity, they lack honesty. Because why? Their day job. They got to go work for these corporations, and these corporations need them to market them. You see, every time a talk show, every talk show is sponsored by a corporation, right? Sponsored by some investor.
Yeah, I don't know why you keep saying that.
Because it is. Okay, look at let's go back to the United States right now. Every program, their budget is about where they're going to get, how they're going to pay for it, and how. By taxation, ain't no way you can bring a budget and have an issue and don't talk about something progressive. You got to pay for it.
Yes, I totally agree with you that we have to put this whole issue of taxation at the front end. However, we cannot ignore what the realities are. The country, as a country, this has always been a no direct tax type country. The idea of corporation tax, which we talked about recently on Morning Blend, income tax, these are things which are not easy conversation to be had, because persons don't like them. There's also the side that we have to consider that the country itself benefits or have benefit up to now from having a low tax, no tax jurisdiction. But we can't fool ourselves. But I totally am in lockstep with you, Mr. Caller, to the extent that, except for the point that, you keep talking about integrity and talk shows and somebody sponsoring them. Because if that is to suggest that, some individual could sponsor and as a result of that, our integrity would go away, that absolutely will not and cannot and just don't. It just won't happen. Not with me. I speak for myself. But the efficacy of or the sufficiency of the tax rule must be considered. Do we have another caller?
Yes, good evening, Mr. Edwards.
Good evening. How are you, sir?
Yes, all right. It's always a pleasure to hear you. I guess you could straighten this out for me, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm confounded by finance and the way how they run this financial paradigm. I read in The Great Reset. And I'm reading it twice. So I'm just about finished reading it twice, and I'm just saying now it is in there concern me mm-hmm. as a global citizen, you know. And one of the things that I'm reading and seeing is the fact that I'm looking at America, you know, as the global currency of the world, right?
Yeah, it's a reserve currency.
Yeah, the reserve currency. Yeah, that's the term they use. And so what happens is now I'm looking at how they run in America, and so I saw something came on where they're still giving the supplement checks to the people for the COVID-19, right?
Right.
And so, like, just have something to do with quantitative easing because I want to really hang up and listen.
Yeah, no. Don't have to rush. You don't have to rush. Take your time.
And so what happens
is... No, this 52, right? This 52?
Yes, sir.
Okay, slow down 52. Let's let's have a reasoning because you're touching on some important things, right? One, you talk about the supplement, the allowance from the COVID, right?
Yes, sir.
And two, you talk about quantitative easing, and we have to spread those out so that persons can understand. I think one of the risks that we face as a country and a market which is dependent on the United States is the extent to which the COVID impetus or the amount of which has been injected into the economy is actually supporting that economy, and it's not necessarily real economic rebound.
Yeah, so one of the things that the book actually said that is correct is the fact that China would be one of the only countries to have a positive GDP after this pandemic. And so the caller that called you just now, he triggered something in my mind because, you know, we know about the lobbyists. And so, you know, I know you're Jamaican, so I grew up listening to reggae because, you know, I went to school over there. But there's a song named Riding for a Fall. So all these things came into my mind. And so I'm looking at the fact that they're issuing these subsidizing checks to people who are unemployed because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not, like, these people are being paid, and now they're trying to get them to go back to work. So it's like they're being paid for nothing, and some of them are reluctant to go back to work. And so the United States government has, you know, they get quantitative ease for a while, and
They can do it for a long time, but
and they were doing it for a while. So I was wondering, like, when would this bubble really burst? Because you have inflation,
mm-hmm.
Deflation, stagnation, and so I don't even know which one is the best because I don't read the book that much. I'm saying that it has to be wrong because the caller that called you just now, he raised something in mind. Every government is riding on the future taxation collection of younger people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You got the pension and all of these different things. And so I'm looking at all of these consumer debts and all these things add up. I can't remember. They had a big figure, man. I know it's trillions.
Yeah.
I know it's trillions because it's real zeros, but I can't remember. It's a big number, like 100-something trillion. I can't remember what their debt was, but...
Yeah, don't worry about it.
And so I'm looking...
Don't worry about the number.
I want to juxtapose all these things, and I'm looking at how the United States is pressuring the whole world for, like they're trying to they gobble up all the money. So I'm looking at the financial. They sense in itself the de-dollarization of their dollar. I'll just hang up and listen. There's something fishy going on, and you can read between the lines that something drastic is going on in the global economy, man.
Right.
And you see all kind of different narratives coming out there as far as the amount of money that actually circulating with this real money. And you could comment on that because, you know, I know the Bible has to come true, man. Have a good day. I'll just hang up and listen.
I appreciate it. Right. I appreciate it, 52. You know, the thing which you speak of quantitative easing is really just the ability to print money. So the United States is such that it can print money and circulate that into its system. Often you hear persons around here say, why don't the government do that? Can't do that. Don't have that type of a resource. Quantitative easing becomes workable, especially given the fact that the United States have such a huge economy. It's an economy which really sits at the center of the world commerce in many ways. And the fact that it is a reserve currency. So it prints money, and then people come in and buy up its treasury bills and so on. So it's in a way lending before the people borrow. You know, if you want to think about it like that, because they issue the money, and then the treasury, through the treasury, persons are able to buy up those same money. And so now they pay individuals interest to take up those particular debts. So quantitative easing works in an important way there. But, you know, I do not want to get too much into the whole conspiracy and thing, but, you know, let's watch what the United States is doing. Let's watch what the big countries are doing. Let's watch what is happening on the, you know, the minimum tax front, because that too, I think, have some implications for us. So where were we as it relates to debt? Yes. So the fact now that we are in the danger zone, where for every dollar we invest in additional monies that we borrow and invest in the economy, it has a negative effect. It therefore means that it becomes now very, very difficult for us to grow the economy if we are going to need additional funding. But here is where we are. Here's why that is important. When you take the budget, when you pick up the budget, don't just read through the numbers. See if you can spend some time decomposing it. And the numbers which you find there in the bracket is part of that whole process. But in order to understand very clearly where we are as a country, we must first realize that, hey, our revenue is insufficient to cover our recurrent expenditure. So recurrent expenditure is basically the things which you spend on every single time. So salary, wages, healthcare, that sort of thing. Our revenue as projected this year at $2.2 billion, which is interestingly would be, if it works out to 2.2, would be the second largest revenue intake in a long time. I don't think we have ever gotten to $2.2 billion in any year other than 2018-2019, when it was 2.4. 2.4, 2018-2019, which was before COVID, not even an iota of discussion of COVID or anything like that, a pandemic being on the horizon. A $2.2 billion projection, which is one of the areas which I believe that there is some weakness in the budget itself, in that the revenue numbers are significantly optimistic. Those revenue projections assumes that the economy is going to come back and perform at or just about the same level as pre-COVID. If you think about it in just simple layman terms, if 500 tourists used to come, at least two is going to be afraid of COVID, no matter how long it takes for us to get over that. Somebody not going to turn up. A couple of people not going to turn up. Or if they did, they are going to come later. Not this year, maybe next year. So the assumption that we get back to almost pre-COVID performance, not in every era now, I need to point this out, this is important. The projections are not saying that in every single era, we are going to get back to that level based on what we are projecting. But when looked at on an overall basis, when looked at on an overall basis at 2.2, it assumes that the economy in totality is kind of percolating at that level. We do understand that there are some new measures in there on Airbnb and some increase on high value real estate properties. And we also understand that there is some expansion as it relates to the tax rule for property tax. And we are open, certainly, and I want you to cross your finger with me, and we want to will that to be so, because it's important. It's important for those areas to be successful, because they are the new measures. They are largely the new measures which the government needs to pay for the things which they reduce, the concessions which they are given to domestic investors, the concessions which they are given in terms of tax credit. 52 mentioned something earlier, which I wanted to kind of prick his mind on, but it slipped, you know, because he wouldn't let me in. But he mentioned the fact that persons are getting these checks and they're not working. Now, the Bahamas government decided to implement a program of tax credit. So if a company was to employ an individual, the company would get tax credit. I believe that that is one of the positive strategic shifts in the budget. Why is that so? Think about it. If you have an option of paying an individual $100 to stay home because they're unemployed, or to forego $100 in revenue by allowing an employer to employ that individual so they can be productive in the workforce, which would you choose? That is one of those measures that we really need to work, because it solves two problems. It shifts that social burden off the government, the administrative burden and stuff that comes with that also. And it puts people back into the economy productively, and therefore the velocity and the productivity impact is likely to have a greater influence on the economy. That one, definitely we need to work. But as they say, the devil is in the details. We have a call on the line. Caller, welcome to The Essentials.
Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing great. And you?
I'm all right, sir. I'm all right, sir. Mr. Edwards, you were saying that the 60% that we're in now is a danger zone, and if all the money's put, like every dollar spent has a negative impact, et cetera, right? And I was wondering, sir, do you see, and you said that the solution to this is that we need a significant rise in, you know, revenue, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, do you
see... Well, growth in the economy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The growth in the economy. I was wondering, do you see anything, like, being done that would supply this significant increase that we need?
When you say being done, you mean as stated in the budget?
Yes, sir. Like, yes, sir, in the budget. Yes, sir. Any preparations being made throughout the economy
I think there are some things which are being done. The question is whether or not those are enough. And like I mentioned to you, the Invest Bahamas is a big, big one.
Yes.
Why is it a big one? Because it is seeking to create a better environment by which the country can attract foreign direct investment and local investment. It has clearly said that, right? I think the Prime Minister was very clear. This is not just about foreign individuals. It's also about local. If we get that right, it is going to do a number of things by necessity. In order for us to create a new sense or send a new message to the investors that this is a brand new day in the Bahamas, we have a brand new infrastructure, we will have to fix what I refer to as the facilitative environment. So persons always talk about the ease of doing business. Those are things which must be addressed in order to best sell this idea that we are now looking at investors in a different way.
Let
me just finish this point. All right. Those are some of the perennial structural issues that we have had in the country for many, many years. So that is moving in a very, very positive direction.
Okay, so what you're saying, though, is that we're still going to be depending on foreign investment to facilitate that significant growth?
Well, the way you stated would convey the impression that you have some alternative. The bottom line is that the country, as a country, the Bahamas cannot grow by itself.
Yeah, uh-huh.
There's absolutely no way the Bahamas, there's no country in the world that grows by itself. Every single country have foreign direct investment.
Yes,
the
sir.
Question is, how can we ensure, or at least, you know, if I'm having this conversation, I'm saying, how can we ensure that more local investors are participating in a more significant way
in the
pie?
Yes, sir.
Because it does two things for me. It injects them into the economy in a bigger way. I think that's one of the terms the Prime Minister used. But importantly, the result of the success. So when they're involved in these various adventures, in these businesses, when these businesses are successful, right, the money isn't running out of the country. The money is staying in the country, and therefore it has the ability to become more over time. So I think that is important.
All right, see, because, what I really want to figure out is there a guaranteed, or is there like a reason for us to be truly optimistic as to say, well, okay, we see something on the horizon that will definitely supply the significant growth in the economy that we need. I'm just trying to figure out if you see something that you can say, another thing about it too, because I'm glad you didn't use the words like optimistic, the glass half full, like how our MPs do when they talk, and we appreciate the way you laying it down, Mr. Edwards, because when we listen to the leaders in the House of Assembly and they talk, they say a whole lot, but they say very little. I mean, questions that they are asked, they talk for a minute, and you still don't get an answer. So we really appreciate this kind of conversation that you're having with us too. But the reason why I was asking, if you see any solution on the horizon, because my question is,
yeah, you asked me that a couple of times.
What is the consequence, Mr. Edwards, of us failing to meet our debt obligation?
Oh, the consequences are great.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm really trying to figure, because I know that if you fail to meet your obligations to the bank on a mortgage, you lose your home.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out as a country, because I remember too that sometime back a few years ago, probably a year or so ago, that we had individuals from our government who was in the state selling government bonds. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out too, like, how does that really tie into the whole situation also? Because if we renege on those, if we fail to even live up to our obligations with the bonds, what happens? I'm trying to figure out what is the worst case scenario.
The bonds are a part of the debt. Let me take the point that you asked.
Yes, sir. Can I have one more question before I go, please, sir?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because I was wondering if we are heading into a time ago there was the era of kingdoms, and we had kings ruling,
mm-hmm.
and now we are in the era of governments,
yes.
right? And the caller talked about the corporations just a minute ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if we are now moving into an era where corporations are going to be openly, that's the key word, ruling, because in my opinion they're ruling now, but they're just ruling from behind the scenes, because if we move into an era, if we move into a time where corporations are going to be ruling,
mm-hmm.
then we can look forward to not having the rights of human beings that we enjoy now. And if you look around, like you see, in my opinion, the climate being set for that type of situation, because daily we are losing our rights as individuals to say what we want and what we don't want to do as human beings. You know what I mean? The rights that we should have as human beings on this planet,
okay.
on this earth. We are losing daily, you see. So I was wondering, what are the consequences? What is the worst case scenario, Mr. Edwards, if we renege on our debt?
Yeah.
And what do you think about that the era of corporations? Is that possible? You know, like when you watch movies like Resident Evil and Avatar, those are corporations who run in those things. You know, that's not government. Yeah. And I was trying to figure out, do you feel as if that is a window into the future?
Yeah, thanks for your call. I'll try to address those. First, let's take the Avatar and those things. I personally don't believe in them, but, you know, they say fiction kind of predicts the future in many ways, so, you know, let's not totally discount them. The fact of the matter is that in every single era, you know, money, capital has always had an influence on countries. In the time back in the days, it used to be individual, you know, the dukes and the other people who own lots of lands and the corporations and the J.P. Morgans and those persons, right? You know, they had the big influence. These days, the big influence are being manifested through corporations like Facebook and YouTube and Amazon and those instances. So it's really kind of the same thing with a slightly different face. The lobbyists are the people with money who want their way. As it relates to the consequence of the debt, obviously, instinctively you know as a human being that if you owe somebody and you don't pay, there could be serious consequences. If you owe the bank, you could lose yours, right? Now, well before we get to the place where the Bahamas would ever default on its debt, and I think we should listen to this very carefully, and I'm effectively going to paraphrase what the governor of the central bank said. Well before the Bahamas would renege on its debt, the citizens would feel a little bit more pain. And that makes absolute sense, because it is not worthwhile. It's not a good thing for a country to default. Countries around this region don't default. Small countries, I think, run a significant risk if they seek to default. It will not happen. So even before we get to that, we'll have to pay some more taxes. So here is a situation. Before we get to that place where there is potential default, and I'm not saying that there is default or default is imminent, I don't believe the Bahamas is anywhere near close to any type of a debt default. We hear about potential restructuring. We hear terms of about reprofiling, which is basically saying, hey, let's take these debt and let's kick them out further, as opposed to a restructure which totally changes the whole nature and maybe involves some level of forgiveness. But those are things that we want to avoid as a country. We really and desperately must avoid those. So as we go through this old budget, and I hope that answers your question, as we go through this budget, the thing that we want to understand and appreciate is that we are at a particular place in time where everything is not hunky-dory. But we also must appreciate that the treatments which are going to solve the problem cannot be done in 1 year. But we have to start someplace. And part of the treatment, an important part of the treatment, is recognizing that we need to grow the economy. And if we don't grow the economy, well, the reason we need to grow the economy, one of the overarching reasons we need to grow the economy, is because there is a recognition that most people around here don't want to pay any more tax. I don't want to pay any more tax either. But lots of people are not comfortable with paying more. The only way we can avoid paying more is to grow the economy so that the government can extract more. And if that doesn't happen, it will have to find taxes from someplace at some point in time. That's kind of where we are. So I believe, like I said at the top, that this whole idea of a critical mass, the debt, maybe is one of the single most important thing for me. But the debt in and of itself is not the problem. People say, oh, the big elephant in the room that we're not talking about. There's no big elephant in the room. The debt is right there. Everybody's talking about it. Nobody is ignoring it. The question is, how do you fix it? How do you fix the debt problem? So I'm going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about that very quickly in the time that we have left. How do we fix the debt? I don't know, but I'm just going to go through a couple of options and let's see how those sit with you. You listen to The Essentials. You listen to The Reset. We come right back.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South, call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Thank you. Mommy, guess what I did in school today?
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died as a result of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting while driving. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Proper hand washing is extremely important as we continue to fight the spread of COVID-19. We touch many surfaces throughout the day. It is important to be mindful of where we place our hands as we may be touching contaminated surfaces and making ourselves sick. This is why you are encouraged to not touch your face. You must wash your hands often throughout the day to prevent infecting yourself or someone else. Always wash your hands before eating and after using the restroom. Wash your hands before and after you care for a sick person. Remember to wash for 20 seconds each time with soap and water, scrubbing your hands together and covering all surfaces of the hand. This simple step can save your life. Let us protect ourselves and each other.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Settling, so many did before me. I'm not settling, yeah. Oh, I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no contest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no.
And welcome back. We have a couple of minutes to go, and so I want to do this so that we have an appreciation of exactly where we are. I thought I would get more into the whole budget presentation, but, you know, let's leave that until next week. It may be stale news by then, but I'm sure there's some value that we can wring out of this whole process. I'm going to take you through a quick decomposition of the way the budget, at least how I see it, right, and the way I think about it. So when I look at revenue, I'm thinking of, hey, where are the possibilities of revenue coming from? So one, it's about existing streams and it's about new streams. So what I mean by existing streams? The stuff which has always been there, they're settled, they're sure. We know generally we are going to get X amount from Y place. And, you know, you can really hang your hat on that, right? Not 100% because things changes. The era of uncertainty is usually the new revenue treatments. So any new adjustment, any new, like the discussion around the property tax roll, the projection around the amount which is expected as a result of realty transaction, which has now been added, the extra 2% value added tax, you can't be 100% sure that that is going to deliver. And that then becomes a challenge. So the government gets its revenue from taxes and fees and sale of assets. Your expenditure is always going to be recurrent, or your capital expenditure. And the recurrent expenditure compared to your revenue delivers what is referred to as your primary deficit. So if your revenue is more than your expenditure, you have a primary surplus, and if it is less, you have a primary deficit. Currently, the Bahamas have a primary deficit. That is, we don't have enough money in the budget to pay for the normal expenses, put them like that, the normal expenses, or the expenses that we really have to pay. You know, we have to pay salaries. We have to provide health care. We have to provide for the police and so on and so forth. These are the things which, in this budget, we are able to pay for. We then move down the line, and then we start to look at our capital expenditure. And capital expenditures are the things we needed to invest in the future of the country. At least that's how I look at it. So we need to build bridges. We need to build schools. We need to invest in roads. We need to invest in human development, in education, in research. All of that sort of thing form the infrastructure of the country on which future growth is going to be built. It's always this catch-22, right? It's chicken or the egg. Do you invest, then get growth, or do you get growth, then investment? I believe that you have to invest in order to get growth, but here's where we are. We, at this point in time, we are not able to afford the capital investment. And if you look at the budget situation over various cycles, what usually happens is that the capital investment gets reduced as a way of restricting the deficit. So in real terms, if we spend what we budget in most instances, our deficit would be larger. If we seek to spend what is needed, our deficit would be significantly larger. We then get to the idea in the Bahamas where we have to think about the reserves, because the reserve is what helped to keep our dollar one-to-one peg with the United States. And so you have your borrowed reserve and your non-borrowed reserve, your usable reserve and your non-usable reserve. The fact of the matter is that most of the reserve that we have currently in the Bahamas is borrowed reserve. Most of it. Today. That gives you an idea of where we are, and it also puts the debt into context. The bottom line is, if we are not getting foreign exchange inflows because we have a peg, we must provide for those inflows from someplace else. And we have to do so in currency in order to ensure that we maintain the parity. So we really, in many instances, are at a catch-22 in order to fully understand and appreciate some of the trade-offs which the government may face. Regardless of what you think about the budget, I think the individuals who put this together, you know, have a hell of a time doing so, because there are significant decisions to be made, right? So we talk about the deficit already. So you have a primary deficit and then the total deficit, or the GFS deficit. The primary deficit is revenue minus expenditure, not taking into consideration your interest costs. So for us this year, it's $2.2 billion minus the interest, which is $512 million. And we end up with a deficit even before we get there. So the Bahamas, from the Bahamas perspective, taking a macro view, we are already in a position, just by outlining the numbers, and this is just for convenience, we are already in a position where we have to borrow in order to pay back our interest, the 512, because we didn't yet have enough money. And then when you add the $370 million for capital works, capital expenditure, that is when the deficit balloons up to the 951. That too has to be borrowed because we don't have that money. In simple terms, we have a expenditure side of $3.1 billion and a revenue side of $2.2 billion. So the deficit is $900 million. We cannot afford to pay our bills in real terms. And the only way we are going to be able to afford that is when we get to the point where we start to say, hey, how do you repay the debt? The debt can only be reduced if we realize growth. And the attendant impact of realizing the growth is that the government takes in more revenue. We sell off some of the assets that we have and we pay down the loans directly. Or we increase taxes. So you and I, as taxpayers, pay more, which gives the government more revenue to be able to repay the debt. Because the thing that we mustn't miss in this whole analysis is the revenue that we have taken in, the expenses that we have, the interest expense and the capital expenditure, we have not yet made any allowance for any reduction in the debt because there's no money. We literally borrowing to fill that hole. So there can be no funds for capital reduction. So we have to be mindful of that as we go about, you know, thinking through this budget. Is it all that we want it to be? Certainly not. I would say absolutely not. There is more that we want, but the question is, can we afford that more at this point in time? Based on the trade-offs, should we not pay doctors? Should we not pay nurses? Should we not pay teachers? There seem to be some harsh and hard decisions that the country has to make as a whole if we're going to fix this. I said before in another place that we have absolutely two options at the extreme. One is a treatment of austerity, or two is a treatment of significant growth. But obviously, there may be a combination of both. But to the extent that we now, in this moment, kind of mosey up to the table, accept the realities that we're faced with, honestly say, this is our reality. Change the narrative between whether you winning the argument or I winning the argument, and collectively we both lose. We have to get to the place where we realize it is time for the Bahamas to win this conversation around its economics. Not for one side or the next, whether it's in the political realm or in the social realm or in the religious realm, wherever, it is not the time for that. The moment is now for the Bahamas to win the economics conversation. And how we do that, we'll have to do that as a collective. We have to get to the place where we say, this is our reality. Here are the strategic treatments which are needed. And here is how we are going to move into the future. Over the short term, over the midterm, and over the long term. I believe, I'm not trying to scare anyone. One, I'm not trying to be an alarmist. But I do not believe that we get out of this without some measure of pain. I think we're there. And that is one of the reasons why I characterize this as a tipping point, because there are some things which are boiling at a boiling point. There are some things which are there in critical mass. And we are at the threshold of a number of very important economic issues which are going to impact the country going forward. How do we fix that? I believe we fix it together as a people. Bring all the geniuses in the room. Start having the conversation. Start to think about where we get the growth. Start to think about how we can grow and expand industries, develop new industries, diversify where we need to diversify, cut where we need to cut. But importantly, we have to come to the realization that the Bahamas in all of this must be I think we should leave it there. I think we are at more than a crossroads. I think we are at a tipping point. The question, though, is, can we take the tipping point and tip it in our favor? Because a tipping point is not a multiplicity of negatives. There are also positives embedded in it. You have been listening to The Essentials. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. This is The Essential. This is The Reset. We look forward to engaging with you again. So join us on Thursday when we build out and talk about our future. Good night.